All right, everybody. So, jumping right into this week's episode, I am sufficiently caffeinated. I'm in a good mood, and I'm ready to talk about how I really feel about the Trump and Zelensky's meeting because many of you have asked me about Tally's take on Elon Musk and his 15 or something children, 13 children with all these different women, how I feel about AI, how I feel about this political landscape. And every time I talk about political shit, people lose it. So I try to stay away from it, but I want to give you a higher energetic perspective around why things are happening the way they are, how they seem to be happening so quickly. And I'll touch on the Elon thing at the end, and I'll maybe take a couple of questions that I wanted to expound upon from my Q&A on social, and we'll go from there. So first, I'm going to give you a broad stroke, in-depth historical summary of how Russia has been demonized through propaganda and why this is, and kind of how we got there, because that's important context to have when it comes to understanding war and proxy war, which is what the Ukraine war is. So first, I'm going to break down the concept of gross domestic product, GDP, because when this was established, everything changed. War is a business and it's extremely profitable, and here's why. So first, the concept of the GDP, gross domestic product, originated after the Great Depression. So, after the Depression in the 1930s, there was an economist by the name of Simon Kuznets who created a kind of a comprehensive measure of national income around 1934. And I will leave some links for you guys in the notes if you want to look at this further, called GDP. It was essentially a way to measure what was being produced domestically because after the war, we were trying to establish how many bombs were made, how many tanks were made. So, if we created a way to measure that, right, through GDP, we would be able to create checks and balances. What are we spending? How much is going out, etc. Basically, the forethought of having a national budget. And it turned out that war was actually quite profitable. If you looked at the bottom line of the GDP, a big chunk of it went to actually creating military specific equipment. So Kuznets comes along and he initially excluded government spending from the GDP, believing it didn't represent enough productive output. But this marked the birth of the GDP as an economic indicator. Fast forward to the 1940s, the GDP became standardized. During World War II, the US government sought a more effective way to measure wartime production, so they adopted the gross national product, so the GNP, which included income earned by US citizens abroad to track economic activity. By 1944, the GDP, gross domestic product again, was refined and gained global recognition as an economic indicator during the Bretton Woods Conference, solidifying its importance in economic measurement. Fast forward to the 1950s and 70s, post-war boom and refinement. This is where the boomer age. In the post-war World War II era, the US economy saw significant growth driven by the industrial expansion, suburbanization, and increased government spending. In 1953, the US formally replaced the GNP with the GDP as the primary measure of economic output. This is important. To enhance its accuracy, adjustments were introduced, such as accounting for inflation, leading to the development of real GDP. These changes solidified GDP's role as a crucial tool for assessing economic performance. Okay, so what do we know about inflation right now? Why is inflation completely out of control? Because we have had, it's called qualitative easing, and I'm not going to do a big financial thing right now, but when you're printing money and funding proxy wars and then using proxy wars to fulfill military contracts, and then you're then selling and using, let's say, it's money laundering. Okay, you're printing the money, you have more money printed than you do circulating, that creates inflation. And through qualitative easing, we have to create deals to like smash the bubble, which is what Trump is trying to do. So you go through Ukraine, you funnel all these military equipment and bombs and things like that to fulfill military contracts through the Ukraine, and then they end up being sold in the black market. All of that recirculates back to the US, which actually starts to
minimize the inflation. And so you actually have a dollar per dollar ratio, and then the dollar becomes stronger. Once a dollar is stronger and it's trading, inflation's lower. Hence, you have the booming economy. Okay, you have to create industry. This is what the boomers experienced because they were in a post-World War boom because of this GDP. War is profitable. Let's continue. So now we get into the 1980s and the 1990s, which is basically the big globalization and new metrics boom. The growth of financial markets and investments in technology-driven productivity shaped the economy at that time. GDP emerged as a central tool for economic policy, with governments and the Federal Reserve relying on it to address inflation and recession risk. In 1991, the US fully transitioned from using GNP, the gross national product, to GDP as its primary economic measure, aligning with international standards and reinforcing GDP's importance in global economic analysis. Then you get into the 2000s, and then you get into 2008 with the financial crisis, and you have another financial boom where you have at the beginning parts of the transfer of wealth. But these dates are important, these decades, because I'm going to reference this later when I show a clip of how Russia has been propagandized and why they have been made the enemy for so long, and try to weave all of these things together. But when you have a financial crisis like that, and you have a crisis where the people who benefit the most are the ones who created the crisis, that's where you have complete and utter corruption. But the military-industrial complex was created after World War II. Eisenhower talked about this as much in his farewell address, where he said, "In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist," which is exactly what you're seeing now. At some point, the left and the right swapped between, you had the right at one point being established as the war party, where the left was the peace party, and that has gone completely out the window. And now you have the left, which is essentially propagandists and fearmongers, and you have the right, which are nationalists and capitalists, and then you've got everyone in the middle trying to figure out where they belong. Before I talk about the actual meeting, I need to talk about NATO. And again, I'm going to share a clip with you, which is going to summarize this whole thing up really beautifully. But NATO is a organization that is essentially funded by the United States to continue military contracts. We have 1,830 military bases around the world. They're divided into two categories. One is called a lily pad, small operating, and the other one is a full-blown military occupied campus. So why do we have so many? Russia has like five, just for context. I remember looking at this a while ago. I was like, why do we have so many military bases around the world? What is really going on here? Because the MIC is incredibly profitable, and war makes money. And that is exactly why we are in all these proxy wars, because the American people would never get behind doing something and creating. We are also funding all of these proxy gangs with Hamas, with the Taliban, with the cartels, things like that. Because, well, we used to. Now we're seeing where all of this money has gone, and we're seeing it through USAID. And I'm not going to talk about AIPAC right now, and I'm not going to talk about Israel, but that could be for another podcast. But again, I'm going to talk about the energetics and the high level, and what I really felt about this Zelensky meeting and what I feel like is going to happen. And then I'll probably talk about some masculine and feminine energetics, because that's what this podcast is about. So NATO, under the guise of being an anti-war party, this is what we want peace, is actually a war party. It's total smoke and mirrors. Whatever they tell you, what's actually happening is the total and complete opposite. So let's talk about the actual meeting. His body language, for example, that of a total and complete petulant child, arms crossed, postured, where I mean, I don't know where he's getting this confidence from. Is he drinking his own Kool-Aid? Because he's been made to be a savior of some sort, in my assessment, and he's been assured by the deep state that Trump would never win and that he wouldn't be able to get away with things like this in his first term. And or he had some kind of conversations with a bunch of EU pundits, and they promised him things. They're like, you cannot look weak in front of Trump. You have to go in there and look a certain way. And I believe that is why he postured. And that is also why the next day he capitulated. But yes, he went in there like a good paid actor and cokehead that he is. And it has been well documented that he is on drugs and amped up. And we already know that he was an actor. I mean, you can just look up Zelensky actor and see that he's playing a character right now, and he's being funded by the EU and corrupt EU at that. He was so hyped up, you could actually see a Ukrainian ambassador, a woman whose name I can't recall at the moment, she was shaking her head like in absolute disgust. Did he get told? I mean, he was basically, so I believe that he was told to act a certain way, and I think he fucked around and now he is finding out, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. But if I'm playing the devil's advocate here and trying to hold nuance, which is what I do my best to do because I want to know the truth of things, I imagine someone like Zelensky is furious. I think he's probably really angry. He has been, you know, held and coddled for 4+ years. He's been funded. He's been given a role. He's been given accolade and power and influence. And now, to some degree, I think he's feeling like he was left out to dry and he's been a little bit punked and now he doesn't know what to do. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. I mean, I could definitely like sense there's just this victim consciousness running with Zelensky where he was like, I just, this isn't fair. I've done everything they've told me to do. And now this is what's happening with me, because essentially he's a weak man. He's a weak man that runs victim consciousness. And if you are running that, to some degree, he may or may not know that the United States is pretty much the only country that would keep him alive, which I'll talk more about in a minute also. Say the thing that disgusted me the most is that the celebratory European tour that followed that meeting to treat him like a hero is just textbook propaganda. The narrative of the savior, kind of in opposition of the big bad bully America, just plays out so well. Right? I mean, it's just giving world political theater, popcorn in hand. He's losing this war, and that was by design. And America is the only nation, again, that would keep him alive when all of this is over. We have literally funded this proxy war to the tune of 70% out of all the countries that have funded this Ukraine thing. Oops, Big Z, oops. You know what I mean? You have to kind of look at that and say, your behavior was atrocious. You embarrassed yourself. You tried to look a certain way, and all we're trying to do is create a peace deal. And the larger theme here is that he walked away and didn't want one, and he's done that several times. He walked away from a peace deal with Putin. He walked away from a peace deal with the US because he's been told to do that because America is led by, Europe is led by extremely weak leadership right now. And I'll talk about that again in a minute. So the truth is that Zelensky has to create some kind of deal in order to keep himself alive. And that's just facts. Any kind of leader that is in his position, who has been created and funded by the opposition, once that opposition turns their back, Zelensky is cooked and he knows it. But let's say the two powerful nations that are anchoring the Ukraine, Russia and America, and that is a patriarchal strong nation. Those are two patriarchal strong nations. That is a threat for Europe and weak leadership countries that are in the middle. But the truth is, Europe won't keep him safe from Russia. We already know that. Who has a right to defend their border, which I'll talk more about in a minute. The UK won't take him in because, quite honestly, right now there's a war on Christianity there. And the UK is being infiltrated by deep state Islamic ideologies right now. And there's a full-on war of Christianity. I mean, if you think about what's happening right now, Christians are being slaughtered all over the world. And the rise into consciousness, into Christ consciousness, which is a D5 consciousness, you guys have heard me talk about this, is happening right now. And it's this last-ditch effort. And so this like massacre of Christians everywhere, the Congonians that, you know, loads of Christians Mercer killed in the Congo, to what's happening now across the world and in the UK. There's signs up saying that you can't pray. And if you are caught praying, you could be turned in. This is very real. This is actually kind of insane. So then you've got America that won't take him. I mean, you come into the Oval Office, you call the president a bitch to his face in Ukrainian underneath his breath with that type of petulant childlike attitude and behavior and insult someone like Trump, that is not going to take you very far, kind of at all. So the idea right now is to make as many deals as possible. We have to figure out as a nation another way to make money besides being in war all the time. And this has been the biggest challenge. That's why you're seeing all these different types of deals being made and tariffs being done and bringing everything back to the US, because deals have to be made in order to lower inflation, to even that curve out, and to create some type of different dynamic that is business centered instead of war centered. People forget America is a corporation. Okay. Everything is running through the Vatican. So the Vatican is the boss, the crown is the money, and America is the military. That's basically the format. And when you follow the money, everything funnels back to big corps making money. And the US is a corporation inside of the 10 square miles of the District of Columbia. You guys can look this up. Once you start to see that everything is business and it's all about making deals and there are no friends or enemies, there are only interests, then you start to see how civilizations are destroyed and how civilizations are created. And you create those through economic power, military power, or expansion. And you cannot do any of those things without all three of those things. And we have those things. So I'm going to go on a little bit of a baby rant here about feminine leadership in the EU and Canada and why it is inherently problematic. And when I talk about feminine leadership, I'm talking about the distorted feminine in terms of energetics right now, and or men that are effeminate. And this is where we have come into a major, major problem in terms of energetics, the misalignment of energetics, why there's so much distortion in the field right now, and why women are utterly just confused and over it and tired and don't want any part of it right now. So feminism, in quotes, and the European state are the first to say, we don't hate men. Look how tolerant, you know, we are. Side note, in nature, the females are the most vicious, absolutely the most violent against other females. You guys have heard me talk about this before. The people who have come for me the hardest online, who have dragged me the hardest online, are women. So back to this whole effeminate European leadership vibe. If you look at the male leaders and look at how they act, they do not act masculine in the EU. They are men that act like girls, because unisex, which is basically flippant, can change their minds, be softer and more malleable, is rewarded. So they don't act masculine. Masculine is strong decisions, go into burning building, that innate drive to protect and provide, follow through with shit, get shit done. That's essentially masculine. Okay. And I see this from an energetic perspective because I understand how energy, if it doesn't have structure, is chaos. So in chaos theory and quantum mechanics, you have particles that are constantly in a state of possibility. Okay. Everything is just possibility until it is created. I wrote about this in my book. When you have energy that doesn't have containment, there is no direction. Literally, the particles are just sitting there spinning in with nothing to do and nothing to create. And eventually that energy, it doesn't get frustrated, but it starts to like get bigger and create more inertia from this anti-gravity vacuum. And then it kind of bursts and you have these starbursts and these expansions. But if you actually contain it, you can create different rule sets inside of that. The energy has infinite potential within this certain bandwidth of reality. So if you look at time, time is the structure of how this dimensional order in the third works. It creates the framework and energy is contained. I think it's called a tesseract, I want to say, is actually the matrix, the structure matrix. It's square in nature. But essentially, you need the electricity to wrap around the electromagnetism that is feminine energy. And that is just part of nature. There's masculine and feminine energies. You need both of them to create a thriving, optimal environment. If you do not, if you have these things that are out of balance, that will, in nature, it eradicates itself in a generation. Women will, the female, not women, but the females will actually sense the weakest of their own litters and kill them or reject them. If they're weak in any way and not optimal, they will reject that baby. And there are also male lions, for example, that will kill off young that aren't theirs. It is savage. Not saying we have to be that, but natural order is this masculine, which is created. There's a genetic drive within their cellular memory to lead, protect, and provide. Women are having to step up and do that right now, and we're really bitter about it. That is why there's so much misalignment. So when you have these masculine leaders in Europe running more of feminine energy, it becomes extremely fickle. Okay, this is where you start to create chaos, and here's why. So Europe is an inherently feminine continent. And the distortion within the feminine at the moment is that it is utterly fickle because we feel so let down by the masculine within a social construct under the guise of wanting equality that we created, and now we're resentful about it, okay? Literally, men cannot win. We expect them at this point to fuck us like Bridgerton, to be savage like Succession, and be our besties like some rom-com. And we have all of these expectations on them because we've felt so let down. And men are just fucking cooked. They're so tired. They're just like, what's even the point right now? I'm just going to hold my dick and say like, hey, what do I do with this? And go to OnlyFans. That's what we've created under the guise of wanting equality. We've created this mess that we're in. And now people who I work on with you guys, some of you guys are in partnership, some of you aren't. So many awakened men and women out there, mainly women, who are really wanting a divine partner. And it's hard. It's harder out there. It's harder to be able to hold that vision of who you feel like you can connect with and still be able to have yourself at the same time. And then there are those who are waking up who are in relationships already, and that gap is getting really wide. And we need men to step up. We really, really need strong men. So, okay, I digress. Back to the feminine leadership thing. Essentially, the reason why this is so problematic, and it's problematic to have men acting like little bitches in Europe and women holding their dicks, sometimes they really are, but being more in their masculine energy and being in leadership is it's throwing everything wildly off balance. The problem is women, not the problem, it's one of our mainly like amazing gifts is that we lead with emotions. It's all about our feelings, and we will give you the world when we still love you, okay? When we're getting what we want and we're still in that dynamic, especially politically, it's all about just we love you. It's all good right now. I'm absolutely going to give you everything you need right now. But the moment we change our mind, the moment we stop loving you, you are fucking out. And we are out of there. And we will go find somebody else to procreate with. We'll find somebody else to be our father, you know, to father our children, I mean. And some of us are looking for a Freudian, you know, father figure. But we will find somebody else to procreate with. Our life will go on because we can create. We can create family. We will survive. We have this innate ability to be able to lean on our seduction energy, to be able to be so unbelievably self-reliant. We will move into fuck you. I don't need you. And I'm going to use all of these people to my advantage. Men without a family or a North Star are lost as fuck. They have no direction. They're terrible at entertaining themselves. They have to have something to work for. Otherwise, they get very, very lost. And women have done a very good job at being so unbelievably self-reliant. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you have to do something. We do not know how to surrender. We do not know how to not control things. We do not know how to receive pleasure. And unfortunately, this is the situation that we're in. But because we're so self-efficient, we'll just do it ourselves. And it's actually getting really sad. So I don't blame men at all for getting OnlyFans accounts, for being in a marriage that because they don't want to leave their kids, they love their kids, and they have a good enough living relationship with their partners that they are seeking emotional love somewhere else. Women who will just literally love them through whatever they're going through. So male leaders on the other side are designed and hardwired to make a deal, shake a man's hand, and follow through with their word. They're created to do that. It's actually in male DNA is to make business, shake hands, and establish that connection and follow through with it. Go into the burning building, save it. We said we were going to do it. It's all about loyalty with them. That's why men have friends like forever, right? The first friend they ever made in fourth grade will be their friend until they die. You know, it's very inherent in the DNA of men, tribal mentality, loyalty, that sense of loyalty. You see this in urban culture where they all want to bring up their friends with them. Women, not the same. Fickle as hell. We will just cut you off. We're savage like that. And I hope that changes. I would love to see that change. I would love to see that curve flatten for all of us and come back to each other. There is this rise, that way, this rise of like homesteading and women's circles and wanting to come back together and soften and champion each other without all this fucking jealousy and cutthroatness and kind of jealousy, like hating on somebody's success and all of that stuff. All of that is just a strategy. It's just all survivability that you don't need to be running anymore. Those are all programs. It's all patterns. And it's, if you really, really get down to the bottom level of the energetics of those patterns, it is a tremendous amount of fear of feeling like you're not going to fulfill your own potential and of being alone. So that's why women are doing what they're doing in terms of their behavior right now. But it's very dangerous to have an out of control feminine. And that's what we have right now. We have leadership. We have men that are acting like women. And then we have very, very strong patriarchal nations like a Russia and an America, for example, that are anchoring in Europe, including the Ukraine. And that is extremely threatening for Europe. So Europe benefits from having a puppet, and they benefit from creating an alliance and trying to align themselves with these other nations besides patriarchal nations to be able to stand up against a Russia or an America, but they will never, ever win. It will be over in 5 seconds if we actually decided to go to war with Europe or Russia. It would be over in 5 seconds. So for example, if you look at what, I'm just recalling something now about what Kaja Kallas said, that it was never really about Ukraine. Ukraine was a proxy to dismantle Russia. They do not want Russia being a powerful nation because they don't want Russia and the United States to be aligned. They do not want it. Propaganda was created specifically by Bernays and several other people to create the narrative to demonize Russia, because again, a unified Russia and America is extremely dangerous for the center. And once the CIA basically purchased journalism, they could plant any information that they wanted. And that is why we are in the position that we are in now, where Americans don't know the truth. It's created chaos. We're confused and we're going against each other. So let me play you a clip that will explain NATO like that. And it's going to do a better job that I could do explaining around why we've demonized Russia for so long, the truth about NATO, and what, and that essentially the Ukraine has been a pawn and millions of people have died. And it's actually extraordinarily very frustrating that we're still here after all of these decades and decades and hundreds of years of war. This clip is from a professor at Columbia University. Let's go.
What was Putin's intention in the war? Not the propaganda that's written about this. Oh, that they failed and he was going to take over Ukraine. The idea was to keep NATO, and what is NATO? It's the United States, off of Russia's border. No more, no less. When the Soviet Union ended in 1991, and an agreement was made that NATO will not move one inch eastward. Now, what happened after 1991, the United States decided there would be no end to eastward enlargement of NATO. And the decision was taken formally in 1994 when President Clinton signed off on NATO enlargement to the east, all the way to Ukraine and into Georgia. So the NATO enlargement, as you know, started in 1999 with Hungary, Poland, and the Czech Republic. And Russia was extremely unhappy about it, but these were countries still far from the border. So the next round of NATO enlargement came in 2004. With the three Baltic states, Romania, Bulgaria, Slovenia, and Slovakia. At this point, Russia was pretty damn upset. So as everybody recalls, in 2007, President Putin said, stop, enough. And of course, what that meant was in 2008, the United States jammed down Europe's throat, enlargement of NATO to Ukraine and to Georgia. This is right up against Russia. And Russia protested, because if Russia decided to have a military base on the Rio Grande or the Canadian border, not only would the United States freak out, we'd have war within about 10 minutes. And a month later, a war broke out. That gets Georgia destroyed. And starting in 2010, the U.S. put in Aegis missile systems in Poland and then in Romania. And Russia doesn't like that. In 2010, Viktor Yanukovych was elected on the platform of neutrality. Russia had no territorial interests or designs in Ukraine at all. What Russia was negotiating was a 25-year lease for Sevastopol Naval Base. That's it. Not for Crimea, not for the Donbas, nothing. In 2014, the U.S. worked actively to overthrow Yanukovych. Everybody knows the phone call by my Columbia University colleague, Victoria Nuland, and the U.S. Ambassador, Peter Piot. Listen to it. It's fascinating.
I don't think Cleat should go into the government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea. I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience, and, you know, fuck the EU.
No, exactly. And I think we've got to do something to make...
You don't get better evidence. Then came Minsk, and especially Minsk II. It said there should be autonomy for the Russian-speaking regions in the east of Ukraine. It was supported unanimously by the UN Security Council. The United States and Ukraine decided it was not to be enforced. There were many thousands of deaths in the shelling by Ukraine in the Donbas. And one of the issues on the table in December 2021, January 2022, was does the United States claim the right to put missile systems in Ukraine? And Blinken told Lavrov in January 2022, the United States reserves the right to put missile systems wherever it wants. So the war started. What was Putin's intention in the war? It was to force Zelensky to negotiate neutrality. And that happened within 7 days of the start of the invasion. Ukraine walked away unilaterally from a near agreement. Why? Because the United States told them to. The idea was that there would be Ukraine, Romania, Bulgaria, Turkey, and Georgia that would deprive Russia of any international status by blocking the Black Sea. And the American senators, who are as nasty and cynical and corrupt as imaginable, say this is wonderful expenditure of our money because no Americans are dying. It's the pure proxy war. And since the U.S. talked the negotiators away from the table, about 1 million Ukrainians have died or been severely...
Okay, so there you have it. There you've got it. That is why we are making the moves that we're making to get out of NATO. That is why we are dismantling USAID. That is why we are dismantling all of these government-funded, they're basically pseudo-establishments and organization to launder money, to destabilize Russia and keep Europe in this place of being in a deeper negotiative position. And it's not working. It's really not working. So what do I think about that meeting? I think Zelensky is a character and a pundit and a very weak man. And I think weak people become are very, well, not only do they become addicted, which if you look at the lineage of where he's come from, it is an avoidant, abandoned type of archetype that I see quite often. And also, I think he's extremely manipulative, easy to manipulate, and gullible. And I don't think he has a very strong identity at all. So I am concerned for what will happen to him. But also, I understand that everything is a recursion loop. Everything will basically duplicate and replicate until that pattern is established at its root, at its origin, and reconciled. So right now we are in a deep state of reconciliation. I will be doing a podcast on, if you want to know kind of about the trajectory where humanity is going, not like a prediction podcast, which I've already done, but you would want to look at trust law. Like I've been basically studying a lot of trust law, deep state trust law, and all of it is throughout religious literature. So specifically looking at and pulling out references from the Bible. And in a meditation I had early on in the year, there was information that came in that was specifically about the New Testament being very reflective of what Israel is, and then also Revelations. And then I needed to be looking at these things specifically with trust law and also the future of technology and the future of humanity. So I will be talking about that at some point. I think Zelensky's biggest problem is that his allies are women, not men, who can protect and provide for him. So this means right now all the women feel like helping him, which means they will make a bunch of promises. They mean what they say. They're not lying. They just mean what they say right now, as we know. But their feelings will change. And when they do, everything changes. And once the tide turns, it's over for him. And this is what I'm saying. Europe doesn't respect America. And as much as they think they're better than us. And I've lived in several European countries, and I can tell you this is just the truth. And I get it. I completely understand. There's many things that are not necessarily better, but are appreciated more with, at least from my perspective, in terms of food and culture and lifestyle, longer vacations, shorter work weeks, where people place their values, etc. But Europe doesn't respect America. And once you have lost respect, you can no longer walk along party lines. And right now, this is what the real revolution is you have a reckoning of not only the energetics finding their place again, but a reestablishment of order. Okay, so what do I really feel about Elon Musk? And then we'll kind of wrap this up. So Elon Musk with his trillion kids and with a trillion women and all of these things. So I believe he's a bit of a transhumanist. And I think he's been cast in a role that he doesn't all the way know yet. And I think he's here to advance civilization. He's a catalyst. I've said the same thing about Trump. And he is absolutely doing that. The mechanics of how he operates is he's able to project his consciousness in various different points in time. So he can project his consciousness in the future, very much in the future. And then what will happen is because that connection point has already been established, the sequencing on how things need to materialize will just boop, 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 fall like right into place because he holds that level of resonance. And that is why he's been able to create so much in such a short period of time. Essentially transforming the automotive industry, saving it essentially. If electric didn't come around, it would be unsustainable. The automotive industry would collapse because it just wasn't profitable the way it was working. If you don't believe me, just look at what happened with electric and look at what happened with gas. Look how many cars and units are sold of each one and then compare them. And then look what he's doing with space. Look what he's doing with satellites, etc. Look what he did with money. He's just going to keep going, okay? It's just going to keep going because this is what he does. He's able to project his consciousness in various points of time. Many of them are futuristic. That's why he's very good at making companies profitable through AI, which is what he's doing with Doge. And quite honestly, it's fine. I want AI is not going to replace people. It's going to replace companies that have hosted people. So it's all about evolution. It's not about people throwing people out of jobs. The issue with Trump, right, and not Trump, excuse me, the issue with Elon right now is that he doesn't have an empath program. He is a bit on the spectrum, and it's kind of like when he embodied, there was a little bit of a fragmentation when it came coming all the way in, and so he doesn't have an empath program. And it's very atrophied, but it activates through children. So children help him feel, okay? They help him feel things. And that's very important for a hybrid like Elon, which is what he is. So a very similar program that ran is with Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs literally created a device that could connect people around the world so he knew what it liked to be when he knew what it felt like to be human. And when I tune into both of them, they run very similar programs around lack of empathy. That's why they're very, very, very hard bosses. So children activate this empath program in Elon, and he experiences that through love. So for him, it doesn't matter. Like, the idea of marriage isn't the North Star for him. It's feeling. It's learning how to feel something and being around women who anchor him. So he's had, he made lots of agreements with all these other beings before he embodied. That's why he has all these babies with all these women. And each of them plays a very specific role in his own evolution. But the idea for him is he's a wild catalyst. His mechanics in terms of the way he can project his consciousness is fascinating. And he's a very advanced being that is here to advance technology if he doesn't destroy himself in the process. And I think he has a hard time with that because it's very isolating. Like, it's very, very alone. He feels very alone. And kids bring him to life. They make him feel things. They help him feel things. Love does that, different, those connections with different women does that. And so I can really empathize and understand that. I was like, oh, I see why you're creating that for yourself. I see what you're doing. So you're creating the scenario of, I don't know how to feel. And so I'm going to run through as many simulations as possible until I feel something. So that I understand. That's how I feel about Elon having kids with, children with a bunch of different women. I don't see the social political stuff. It's fine. I'm wildly more interested in what are the underlining programs and patterns that he's running? Why is he choosing to create his reality this way? And what are the fulfillments? Programs and patterns are designed to fulfill themselves. They are going to accommodate the emotions. Right now, he has that level of savagery, specifically with what's happening with Doge. I don't agree with how he's doing it, because there's a lot of people who are public servants who love their job and love the dedication to their government and their country that are kind of getting cast aside. So it's not an optimal way he is running Doge. But because he doesn't have an empath program, he understands the bigger picture. He was like, I have been tasked to find the bleed, and I will find it and I will end it immediately. Not now. Imagine trillions of dollars being set on fire every single day. You're like, well, there's people I have to care about. You don't care about that. He's looking to solve the problem. So that's why I'm kind of, great, man, go have a bunch of kids, feel something, create that life for yourself. Different experience. Very interesting. It's not the ideal family life that I would want, but I understand why he's creating that for himself. There's a great question that came in about AI, but I feel like I need to do a part two on that, because AI is fascinating. It's an amazing tool. I'm actually quite excited by it. And when you realize that you're witnessing this powerful tool that will advance and expand the parameters of what's available for us in terms of consciousness, you will look at it a different way. It is an extraordinary tool. And I believe that Elon is in the position he's in now, specifically with AI, to keep an eye on it. So I wouldn't be afraid by it. I wouldn't be afraid of it at all. I think it can go one of two ways. Just like with everything that's happening right now, there are people who are going to run and be completely stifled and live inside of their fear patterns and be controlled in perpetuity. And there are those who are going to wake up and begin the remembering and reclaiming process. And then there's going to be 50 shades in between. That's why it's a very exciting time to be alive. Look how fast things are changing. And by 2030, 2035, things will be so unrecognizable, it will be crazy. And if you give it about 18 months, you'll see that there'll be significant shifts. That's why I'm in the position I am in now. That's why I've been asked and called to lead in a different way, a little bit more behind the scenes and not so much in a mainstream way. And I believe that women are waking up first because we have to rebalance first. It always happens with us. And when we realize that our true power and magic is working through a masculine, not trying to be the masculine, everything will shift. All right, you guys, more to come. Thank you so much for the interactions online. Please help me if you can by leaving a review. It helps me get this information, this podcast, out to more people. And I will see you in the comments. I will see you online and speak to you when I speak to you next. Take care.